Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm Don Nikoloff, and before we bring tonight's guest on, I just want to cover a little bit of news. It's March 22nd on the East Coast, March 21st on the West Coast, and this is a Friday night. They show the spooky movies at night, and we're going to have kind of a spooky topic, but before we go into our topic, I want to share the recent barrage of reports that we have on a couple of, actually it's three candidates evidently, running for president of the United States, whose information has been, let's say, compromised, and it's been compromised because someone has gone into their passport records. And when someone does that, they can find out where a person was born and if they happen to have been born outside the United States. And that got to the public's consciousness that maybe it would be found out they're not eligible to run for president. Or, as they like to spin it in the media, everyone's worried about getting the information of these three social security numbers out to where people are going to take advantage of that and possibly commit some crime under the auspice of identity theft. And then there's personal data that goes into the passport that no one's supposed to know. And I find it rather ironic that this is happening to everyone else in the country, and when we voice our displeasure over the fact that our privacy is being invaded by the politicians and their little bureaucracies, that we have no voice, that we have no right to protest and speak in anger about that. They use that as an excuse for national security. They know that we are not terrorists, but they like to imply this, and this is to shut us up and stop us from telling the truth. And that's not going to happen. So I find it rather interesting and rather ironic that that these three candidates feel it warrants a congressional investigation. While you're at it, investigate all the privacy invasion that's going on amongst the citizenry of this country. After all, you are servants working for us. We're not working for you. And with that, I would, and that's my rant for the evening, that I would like to invite on board Evident Footprints, my guest, and he's becoming a co-host on the show, especially when we get knocked off the air. He is a scientist, an inventor, an author, a lecturer, and a teacher, and our good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, good evening. How are you?
I'm well, Don. How are you tonight?
Very good, and I can hear you clear as a bell, so we have
well,
a good start.
I can hear you perfectly, too, which is nice.
Okay, well, you got to hear my little rant, and sometimes it feels like we're on another planet, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes it feels like I want to be on another planet.
Yes, I kind of feel the same way. Tonight, we are going to take a trip again to Mars, and we've been discussing Mars over the past few weeks or so, maybe the past month, and there are many anomalies that have been proven to be signs of life and signs of intelligent life, probably more intelligent than the life we have down here. And I'm sure you'd probably agree to some extent on that one.
Well, I agree full-heartedly, but I'm not going to elaborate.
Okay. All right. I know. You had mentioned you were going through a cold or something, and you know there seem to be some designer viruses going around our planet. I had a email that I got from Michael St. Clair, who was in Europe, and he took a trip to Zurich, Switzerland, and told me that the rain was just profusely inundated with viruses. People were getting sick all over the place, and he got very, very ill. But he came around after 4 or 5 days, he said. So there's some new diseases going around, and we should probably brace for that. Wonder if they're
Martian. I'll tell you, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to say, I wonder if they're Martian in origin, or these are just new strains being developed.
Well, I don't know if they're Martian in origin, but I can tell you something interesting. When I first moved out here to the Midwest, naturally being from the East Coast, there were a lot of things that I wasn't 100% familiar with. But it's striking in a very short order how much aircraft activity there is all over Nevada, certain parts of California, Texas, Arizona, etc. And they all leave these very peculiar vapor trails, and they crisscross in patterns back and forth across the territory. And I, for the first time that I saw it, I assumed that it was military vehicles doing some kind of exercises. But for the life of me, I could never remember vapor trails that pronounced or that long-lasting. And when you make local inquiries about it, almost everyone, without a doubt, will volunteer the information, oh, that's the government spraying us with experimental germ cultures. And, I mean, they come right out and tell you this. Now, where they get it from, I don't know, but as most people do, they put two and two together, and they get four. They said, every time these things fly a pattern over the countryside, you have an incredible increase in bronchial infections, you have all kinds of nervous disorders, and the death rate of elderly people goes way up. So is it a coincidence, or is our benevolent government at work again?
Well, this is something that I've talked about ad nauseum on Evident Footprints, as well as when I've been a guest on some other shows. And we know Morgellons is caused by this, although the CDC says that, no, that's not a disease, that's Lyme disease. Well, there were people in the city coming down with this stuff, and it's not like ticks are climbing the skyscrapers, if you understand my meaning.
I think so.
Now, it's interesting that you're getting that kind of feedback. What areas are they actually telling you that that's going on?
Well, here's an example. When I first came out here, I lived in Nevada for about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And they were all over the Nevada area, and so naturally you talk to your neighbors, and that's what they had to say. When work got scarce in Nevada, I used to commute to California. I had a job out there with a buddy of mine rewiring burned-out buildings and stuff like that, and we used to spend the week living in a inexpensive hotel and then come back to Las Vegas on the weekends. People out there had the same comments. I have a very good friend, as a matter of fact, he was a guest on your show at one point, who is from Colorado, and he reported to me that the same thing is going on in Colorado. About a year ago, I was invited to give a lecture in Cottonwood, Arizona, and the people out there are ready to burn somebody at the stake. There's so many people dying of bronchial infections, and they say that you have to be an idiot not to be able to see the correlation between these flight activities and the resulting sicknesses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless they think we're really stupid, for all intents and purposes, they're blowing their cover. I mean, it's obvious that something is going on.
Well, in Ohio, they started the day after 9/11. And I'm speaking about the event in New York City.
Yeah.
So from September 12th, of 2001 onward, they started spraying the skies. They began with X's, first of all. In other words, when you ask someone what was going on, someone who had some connection to the military or to aviation, they said, oh, they're marking the skies. They're looking for terrorists. Well, that was their first ruse. Then they just came out and said they were contrails. Well, I'm waiting for the crash dummies and the weather balloons and the swamp gas explanation right now, because that's gotten old and it's just absolutely ludicrous that they think we're that stupid. There has been analysis of what's in these things. Some people say, well, don't call them chemtrails, call them aerosol plumes. Well, you know, right. I think of, you know, what does it matter what it's called, what it is, and I said this on one show on a Patriot Network, what they really are aerial assaults on humanity. Now, we know, we have found out that these are CIA planes, and believe it or not, there's an airport in, I don't have the information right in front of me, but it's on my webpage, in fact. I'm going to go there so that while we're talking about this, we can discuss the location, but the particular aspect about the planes that they're using, in the beginning they were just using the laboratory area of a commercial plane, and they were outfitting these spray nozzles on the wings and on the tails of the planes. And a mechanic who used to work on the wings was asked to do work on the laboratory while the regular mechanic was off that day. So in working on it, he happened to discover there was an extra tank that wasn't supposed to be there. And he followed these tubes that ran all the way up to the wings of the plane. And he knew that was something that was not supposed to be there. He went home and used his computer and actually, he had used the computer there, right there, to see if he could find out what this was on the schematics, and it didn't show on the schematics of the plane. So when he got home, he did some research. The next day, they suspended him from work. They had actually monitored his browsing activities on his home computer, and obviously they were aiming to silence him. And he did put a posting on the internet describing this whole thing. Now, the name of the CIA firm is Evergreen Air, located at Pinal Airport in Marana, Arizona. It's a longtime CIA NSA secret facility for over 40 years, and it's the prime modification center for all kinds of aircraft that are modified with these chemical sprayers. And, I mean, if you're spraying chemicals and they're leaving trails in the sky, what else would you call them but chemtrails?
I agree with you.
Okay. Now, the individual who came out with this information had firsthand knowledge, Tim White. And originally, he came out when they were spraying over the skies of Denver. He is a U.S. Air Force veteran. He was flying way back during the days of Vietnam. And he claims that since mid-November 1998, they've been spraying over the Denver area. And I can tell you, when I was down in Arizona a little over a year ago, I have never, ever in my life anywhere in the country seen so much chemtrail spraying. Basically, from Prescott to Phoenix was solid chemtrails all the way. And that's a two-hour drive. So, you know, you're roughly it's about 120 miles. Completely, just checkerboard, back and forth. And they were even shooting these plumes vertically. And then they were flying up to these vertical points. If you can picture something a couple of hundred feet high, and they were like making designs in the sky. By the time I got to Phoenix, you couldn't see in front of your face. Literally, at the airport, you could not see across the street. You could see a car up by the curb, and everything was hazy, and I could not stay outside. I got out of the vehicle I was in, and I went straight in to board my plane. There were people standing outside waiting on people in that stuff. Now, I have a friend that just came back from that area today, and they described the same scenario that I'm describing. They've never seen so much chemtrail activity. 20-hour waiting lines to get into the emergency room in the hospital.
Wow.
And last year, about this time, it was a 14-hour waiting line.
So it's being successful, whatever it is.
Oh yeah, it's
well.
It's
the
really...
people that told me about it were also from Arizona, and they were the ones who had the most to say, which now makes sense considering that you just mentioned that base is there. And
mm-hmm.
One of the things they told me, I thought, it's just a darn shame that these people aren't a little bit more scientifically motivated. They told me that some mornings they get up and there's a white dust that's all over their lawns and on their automobiles
mm-hmm.
and all over the place. And they don't know what it is, but they generally just wash the car and wait for the rain to get it off the lawn. I think if that could be brought to an independent laboratory, you might at least find out what the heck it is.
Well, they've found 27 different chemical compounds and metals within there, even gold. There's barium, ammonium, and they found red blood corpuscles in it, anthrax, tuberculosis, and other designer diseases. Basically, and then you have these nanopolymers that are in there that they're putting in there so that it's able to hold moisture and keep this stuff alive. Basically, it's like a floating laboratory in the sky is what it is. And it's got a deadly, deadly cocktail in it. They're doing this to attack.
The cola herd?
Well, yeah, basically, it attacks your immune system. And now, this isn't just affecting people. If they're spraying this over wide areas like they are, they're infecting all the crops. They're infecting animal life. I mean, this is sick. This is not human. This is totally a reptilian project, guaranteed.
Well, either that or they're totally madmen. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, after all, they live here, too, you know.
Well, see, they're spraying over our areas, and they think that they're safe where they are. And then, again, they go hide in their little holes in the ground, probably on the weekend, and have their little parties and their pedophilia at the same time. So, it wasn't our intention to talk about this, but, we certainly can do a show on this. And there's
There is a link to what I wanted to tell you,
mm-hmm.
so it's not altogether lost.
Oh, okay. You did bring it up, I think, didn't you? Or was it me? I can't even remember.
Well, you brought it up, but I was glad you did because I had an idea earlier when I was reviewing some of the material for tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I was particularly interested in the swamplands and the creeks and trees and stuff like that that's now visible on these rectified Martian photographs.
Yeah.
And even though there are no overt pictures of animal life, it stands to reason if you have vegetation and you have water, you've got something living there. Plus, somebody built the buildings. You know, I mean, they didn't grow. But anyway, my point was that if the water is anything like the water here, and I don't see how it couldn't be, because nature is extremely repetitive in her functioning, then it could easily harbor bacteria that we know nothing about. And if we have a base up there and we are intruding into that space, wouldn't it be logical, first of all, to do an examination of your immediate surroundings to see what the threats might be, and after you have isolated them, then you know what to do about it? Well, supposing they found bacteria that were completely foreign to the human immune systems, it would make a perfect introduction in a diluted form for wiping out all kinds of people. And since that seems to be their goal, I mean, you read the Charter of the United Nations, and they come right out and tell you what they're going to do. They want to eliminate two-thirds of the population of the Earth. So it was just a thought. I can't prove it, but it's an interesting concept, and it goes hand-in-hand with some of the things you've seen in your visions.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that, what comes to mind while you're mentioning this is these pictures of the skulls that we've seen from Mars. They're definitely they definitely resemble something which is probably a biped in origin, probably humanoid, and they're obviously there as a result of some epic event that occurred. They're just lying out there in the open. They're not buried or they're not hidden from view in any way, as if something tragic happened and everyone had to leave or everyone was wiped out, if you get
right,
my meaning.
Right.
Whether that's a war or a catastrophic event like a virus or some planetary event, it appears that the skulls, and I've seen numerous pictures of these in the first set of pictures that I gave you last year. If you recall the black and white photo that has alien writing on it. And I said, look at this. Here's a skull here. Now, that source wasn't from NASA. Picture didn't come from NASA. So when I saw these photos that came evidently from NASA through someone that worked at the European Space Center, I found it very interesting, number one, that our people wouldn't show us that. However, someone else in the space program in Europe felt that we should see this. In fact, it was a woman that snuck these pictures out, I was told. And,
yeah, you told me that.
Yes. So, well, for the new listeners, and the analysis, definitely, as they zoom in, it's not something that sort of looks like a skull, and then as you zoom in, it loses some quality. Every aspect of changing the tones of the lighting in the picture, changing the contrast, the brightness, the gamma levels, definitely clarifies the picture that you can see it's definitely a skull. It has eye socket. It has a cavity where a nose would be, and what appears to be a mouth. Now that's a little bit obscured, but it's the odds of that being a rock and looking like that, or a quadrillion to none, if you get my meaning. There's no chance that it's anything but the remains of a living being.
Sure.
And taken into context with the fact that there's water, as you mentioned, there is plant life. I've been saying this for years, and I never really had anyone tell me to my face I was crazy for saying this, because I had been so accurate about other things that I had seen. And it's easy. How do I see this? It's not so much a vision as going there astrally, literally going there in the spirit body. That's all it is. And you see things just like you see them with your eyes. Now, this past Wednesday, this is just for reference, we had Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot. They have interviewed people who know about the Mars program. They've talked about it. This has been confirmed that this is for real. Even the young Russian boy who we mentioned last week, Boriska, at age 12 now, since he was about 5 or 6, been talking about what is on Mars and what civilization was there and where they went in the universe. And it's borne out by these pictures. Those stories aren't coming from him having seen the pictures. He's describing things that can be verified in other ways, just by what's going on in the space program and what we know.
Is any of his material on the internet?
Yes, it is. It's at the Project Camelot site. You can go to projectcamelot.org, and you will see the interview posted right there. The video, the audio, and a transcript are all there.
I would really like to see that.
Yes. Now, Michael St. Clair has been talking about this in his, what we would say, time travel. Now, he's not using a time travel machine. He's using time travel resonators and sitting in energy vortexes and getting this information, seeing it very clearly. Also, Edgar Cayce talked about Mars. Nikola Tesla talked about Mars. And there's an individual who is being touted by another one of my guests recently, as far back as 2 weeks ago. Wynn Free wrote the book on the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and that is David Wilcock. He has also been interviewed. David Wilcock has been interviewed by Bill and Carrie. And there were at least 4 hours of interviews on their site of David Wilcock, and he talks about Mars. So this information that we are bringing from the spiritual realm is being borne out by the scientific and the photographic evidence that we have. And Lord knows what they're not telling us.
Well, also, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but there are many ancient writings which not only make reference to the red planet, but to the fact that there was a war between several planets, and the Earth still bears the scars of it today, and so does Mars. And supposedly, and I say this with tongue-in-cheek because I have no way of knowing, but supposedly there was another planet in our solar system between Mars and Jupiter, which now is the asteroid belt, and that was completely destroyed during the conflict.
I've heard that, as well as we had a second moon here, too.
Yeah, I heard that. I have heard some very strange stories about the second moon. The interesting thing is, we are taught in basic science that the moon essentially reflects light from the sun. And, of course, there's no reason not to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But according to some of the ancient writings, the moon develops its own light just the same way that the atmosphere of the Earth develops its own light. And what I mean by that is that daylight is actually a much more complex phenomenon than just the fact that the sun comes up. Supposedly, the sun emits rays which have interaction with oxygen molecules in the Earth's atmosphere, and that produces a local effect that we interpret as daylight. But when you actually go out into space and look at the sun, all you see is total darkness with a glowing spot. And I've been told that as you approach it, it even gets darker because you're so far away from the influence of the atmosphere that there's nothing to see. Now, if any of those things are true, it means that our science is way off. But getting back to this idea of a second moon, what's really fascinating about it is, according to this old theory, which, by the way, has been resurrected recently, and you can now get a hold of it. It's been translated from the Indian writings, but I can't remember the name of the book. It's got a pretty long Indian name to it. But nonetheless, according to that writing, it's the vortex or the spinning energy envelope around these celestial bodies, which gives them these certain properties. One of which is the production of light in its atmosphere. And that if the vortex is destroyed or in any way interfered with, it can lose its light-bearing properties. Now, the story that I heard went hand-in-hand with this, that there's actually a second moon still orbiting the Earth, but it's a dark moon. And since they have no explanation for it, even though they know it's there, that they have not told anybody about it. Now, I have no way of proving that, and it could just be hogwash, but it's certainly an interesting concept.
Well, it could be devoid of, let's say, the atmosphere. Or now, when you're saying atmosphere, are you including the ionosphere, or are you saying what would be immediately inside the ionosphere?
Well, see, atmosphere in the broader sense means everything that comprises the halo around a particular planetary body. So that would include such things as the magnetic field, the electric field, whatever gases might be are surrounding the planet, and whatever other influences there might be happening in that envelope. So if something happens to destroy that equilibrium, don't forget, these are cosmic machines. They're designed by a superior being. If something screws up their components, they cease to function properly, just like anything else. And it's an interesting thought, is all I'm saying. I have no idea if it's true or not. But I can tell you an interesting anecdote that relates to it. I once knew a guy, I won't mention his name because he was fairly prominent. He was an investigator that I met in New York City who is a very outstanding member of Mensa. And he had invited me to give a lecture once in New York City. And unfortunately, I had an abscessed tooth and I couldn't make it. But afterwards, he invited me to meet him personally. And it turned out that he was the son of a CIA, I don't know if he was an operative or an agent or what he was, but somebody that was in the CIA. And I mentioned this this dead moon theory to him because I heard it from Warren Goetz, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, now that's a fascinating concept. You know, he said, my father is still living, and he's very well connected. He said, I'm going to run that by him. And he called me at my home in New Jersey several days later, and he said, don't touch this subject. And I said, why? What's the difference? And he said, just take my advice. Don't go there. And that was all he said. He wouldn't explain it any further. So I don't know what that means, but it's very interesting. So it's just another, you know, strange component on the endless list of subjects that were kept in the dark about.
Yeah, I've seen that in several books, and I think one of them is the Urantia book, and I think the Oaspe Bible, which you and I have talked about, actually both these books, it's mentioned in there as well. And I have the feeling that that's very likely the case. There could be thousands of these around us, not just this one, but, you know, in our vicinity.
Yeah.
And it could be an aspect of what is to come in terms of a shift in the dimensional reality that's around here, because we know it's going to happen to this planet, and it's quite possible that that moon, which is now unseen by the naked eye or even certain optical equipment that we have, will possibly make itself visible when that reality takes place. But there's a...
That would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, the term metaphysics is so often misrepresented by everyone but those who study it. And really, it means outside physics.
Yeah.
And it can't be explained by physics. Maybe to a point it can, but there's an element of it that that really surpasses science as we know it collectively, and how it's taught and what is accepted. And I think the new science is going to have to acknowledge what metaphysics brings to the table, because there are many unexplained things that occur that science, you know, actually debunks or tries to debunk as if they know it all. And you know, I'm not attacking you. I know you're not the run-of-the-mill scientist either. You know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
it's interesting you should bring that up, Don. My son, who is visiting with me, brought me a lovely book as a belated Christmas present. And it's on a subject which he knows I'm interested in. It's called The Mind of God. And it's very interesting, and I think it's well written, and it's fairly scientific, but here's the problem with it. Everything in there is treated as if it's absolute fact. And it's all treated in such a manner that as if everything that we know is 100% correct and that there's nothing left to learn. And it's like trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle just with the pieces that we have, when to me it seems obvious that there are thousands of missing pieces. I don't think it's for man to ever understand the mind of God or what God actually is, but whatever it is, you're not going to understand it by looking at a mere fraction of reality and trying to make sense out of it. And I think that that same type of philosophy also bogs down the normal realm of physics.
Mm-hmm.
These people are so dogmatic and so sure of themselves that all the laws of nature are understood, then how come they can't get anywhere with anything?
Mm-hmm.
It's very strange to me.
It sounded like we have a caller here. I'm not sure if we do, unless you bumped a button on your phone. Do we have a caller? I guess we don't. Okay, you might have accidentally bumped something on... Oh, wait, maybe we do have a caller. Nope, no caller. No, okay. You were just trying
to... One of these days we should get a caller.
We should. Well, I invite people to call into the show. If you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, by all means, just call bbsradio.com. The numbers are on the homepage. When you go to bbsradio.com, look on the right side by stream number one, and you'll see the numbers if you'd like to join in on the conversation, particularly those with the NSA or NASA. You might learn something. In fact, I could give that number out if you want to call 877-876-5227. We'll pay for the call. How's that? Can't beat that. Well, let's see. Where were we now? So we were talking about...
I was just commenting on the fact that I'm not so sure all the laws are well understood. You know, one of the most ironic things about it is that the force of gravity is the hinge pin that allows for the most of the model of the universe as we know it. And, of course... Einstein's general theory of relativity, which explains gravity as a four-dimensional process involving the curvature of space-time, is embraced vigorously by the entire community. And that's all very well and good. But frankly, in my humble opinion, I don't see how it explains the force of gravity at all. And until gravity is really understood as to what it is as a local phenomenon, I don't think that a lot of these questions are going to be answered to any meaningful depth. And that goes for a myriad of other subjects. It isn't just that one. I mean,
well,
we could go into it sometime, but I think there's an infinite amount of stuff left to be learned.
It's probably appropriate that you brought that up, because I wanted to talk about how one would get from the Earth to Mars, and what has come out from all the folks that have been interviewed, let's say, like by Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy, and sort of spilled the beans on what they know and what they've seen. They speak of wormholes the way they're referred to in the military, and certain people in the space program, they're referred to as stargates. We're talking about pathways to enter these timeless zones, if you want to call them that, almost like you're going into a certain kind of vacuum that's a high-speed expressway to get to where you're going in a much shorter time. Now, if gravity is what Einstein said it was in his theory of relativity, why is it that you can avoid gravity by going into these wormholes? What is distinct about them? And they probably resemble vortexes of some kind or another. Why is it that phenomenon stops there? What is it about the nature of what surrounds them that allows them to maintain their shape, allows them to evade all the other laws of physics that apply to everything else in the physical realm? That's an interesting concept, I think, and you are definitely more qualified to speak about that than I am. I just that's always been a question in my mind. If there's a place one can go on the planet and enter one of these holes, why is it that that hole is not subject to the law of gravity? Unless the law of gravity really is totally wrong, and it is, like you and I have discussed in the past, maybe a pressure from outside pressing down as opposed to something pulling us.
Well, first of all, instinctively, that's the way I've always viewed it, even when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter because, you know, I don't amount to a hill of beans in the greater scheme of things. But here's something that's interesting, and it comes from one of the demigods that our society worships, and that's Einstein himself. Did you know that after he formulated his general theory of relativity as an explanation for gravity, that in his later years he stumbled upon a conundrum that was brought into existence because of his own theory? And that conundrum was the fact that if gravity is the glue that holds the universe in place, and theoretically if every star and every planet and every bit of matter in the universe is attracting every other star and planet and bit of matter, then sooner or later it's just all going to clump together into this big mess, and we'll have a thermodynamic death of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, everybody who's studied any kind of rudimentary astrophysics can tell you that the exact opposite is happening. All the bodies in space, including the galaxies, are rushing away from one another, not towards one another. And so to try and rectify this situation, Einstein apparently went back to the drawing board, I think it was late in his life, and tried to find a reverse polarity to the gravitational concept that would explain how this equilibrium could be obtained when bodies got to be a certain distance apart or something else would happen to them, that instead of being attracted, they'd be repulsed, so that they would, you know, have a natural tendency to float at a particular position, like a ship on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave up in disgust because it turned out to be full of contradictions, and the complexities were beyond even his capabilities of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't think that we have the answers to an awful lot of things. But as far as getting back to these wormhole things,
mm-hmm.
I the only thing I can tell you, and I'm really a long ways from being an authority on this, but my gut feeling is that gravity is a much more localized phenomenon than what we're given credit for. And what I mean by that is, I don't think that the way things work is the way we are told that they work. I think that... Well, let me give you an example. For instance, I believe that the planet itself generates the gravity that holds us to its surface. Or it invites it. Maybe that's a better way of terming it. And it invites it in a manner that has to do with its construction, its motion, and a bunch of other things. So if that was true, it would seem to indicate that it's actually a localized phenomenon. The ingredients for it may well permeate the entire universe, but the effect is regional. Now, if that's the case, not only does a wormhole not be affected by this, but theoretically, a miniaturized version of that planet that operated on the same basis could travel freely in a spacious environment. And that's what my personal concept is, that that's what flying saucers are. They are miniature planets that have been engineered from a superior understanding of what really is going on and what the Creator had in mind when he built all these worlds. And that's the reason why they can bounce around the universe like that.
So in essence, there would be no friction or destructive friction that a flying saucer would go through as it's moving through that space, just like there is no friction of the Earth moving through space.
Well, not only that, there'd be no relative acceleration either. So in other words, like, for instance, if you have a crew of five and you're zipping along at 150,000 miles an hour and you decide to execute an immediate 180-degree turn, so now the next instant you're going 180,000 miles an hour in the other direction, you're not even aware that something has moved. And the reason for that is because the same force that's operating on the ship is operating on all its occupants simultaneously, so there's no relative motion.
Yeah,
if there's
otherwise,
no relative motion, there's no perception of inertia.
Otherwise,
there are no acceleration forces.
Yeah, otherwise you would be just a wet spot on one of the walls or the floor or the ceiling, right?
Absolutely.
As it changes direction.
Doubt.
Yeah. Okay, that opens up lots of possibilities for new science and new understanding of what's going on. So it makes it much easier to grasp the concept of us being on another planet now. In other words, it's not something that becomes an epic and a topic for a movie, and where the movie's about the traveling there. It's almost instantaneous then.
Well, I don't know if instantaneous is the right word. I forget how many millions of miles Mars is from the Earth. But let's assume that you could reach a speed, even 90% light speed, because we wouldn't want to get all the relativistic physicists ticked off and even begin to assume that you can transcend the light barrier. But, I mean, at three-quarters the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second, you'd be at Mars in a shake of a lamb's tail. You know, it's not like a 2-year journey that you have to undergo if you were traveling there in a rocket. Because most people may not know this, but a rocket, you know, is strictly a trajectory oriented device. You aim your vehicle and give it a blast, and maybe you've got enough fuel to make a few corrections, and the rest is a coast. And if your orbital mechanics are not right, you miss your shot, you know. So I realize we're very accurate with all this kind of stuff nowadays, but still, it's a 2-year journey by the coast and weight mechanism, and it's probably a matter of minutes by advanced vehicle.
Yes. I think now my understanding of Mars is that it changes distance constantly from the Earth. Sometimes it's closer, you know, because it's on its own orbit. So in relationship to Earth and to the Sun, it changes. But basically, if you consider that the Sun is about 93 million miles away from the Earth, And that's one AU. My understanding is that Earth and Mars are about half an AU apart. So that would be what, 45, 46 and a half million miles?
Oh, whatever it is, it's too far to walk. And it's a perilous journey, too, by the way.
I was going to walk there this weekend. Oh, my God. I got to change my plans now.
But it's also a perilous journey. I mean, let's face it, you know, even if you have volunteers that are interested in traveling to these distant orbs by means of conventional rockets, once they're out there strictly coasting along, you know, under the influence of Newton's laws, and they have nothing else to rely upon, there's absolutely nothing to prevent a meteorite from puncturing a hole in their ship, or from some other catastrophe that we know nothing about at this point, of destroying the entire mission. If you have a vehicle that's constructed like a planet and has its own gravitational field, the field itself will protect the occupants, because the incoming particles would actually encounter a force field when they approach the ship. So, I don't know, maybe it's just my imagination, but I honestly think that that there are civilizations that make use of this approach, and The universe has been thoroughly explored by people a lot smarter than us. And now the real question is whether or not we actually have access to this type of technology, and that's another one of the black secrets. According to you and a few other people that have investigated this on a spiritual level, they have this type of technology, and the rocket business is just the front for the whole thing anyway.
Yeah. Now, I went to another website, which is associated with the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay. And they say that the distance of the sun to Mars is, on the average, is 142 million miles, and that there is a perihelion distance of 128.6 million miles and an aphelion distance of 160 million miles. Now, I said something like there's a difference of 46 million miles there. Actually, that I was about 4/10 of a mile off. Tenths of a million miles off. I misspoke there.
That's not so bad on a cosmic scale. Don't be hard on yourself.
But in now here is the distinction in terms of what the Earth is doing. That distance varies from 36 million miles. To over 250 million miles. So it's as a result of this very strange orbit that Mars has. I think it's a lot more unstable in a sense, or at least in terms of, you know, being a relatively circular pattern. So that's interesting. Now, surface temperatures range from minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit to minus 200 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know if I buy that based on what we see in these pictures. Or these are some sturdy trees and sturdy plants, sturdy animals, and may explain why we have the skulls there.
Well, it would also be hard for water to flow at those temperatures.
Yes. Absolutely. We wouldn't see boats on the water either, like we've seen in some pictures, or ships.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's something I haven't seen.
Oh, yes. I saw, about a year ago, saw a picture that had a ship. When you zoomed in on it, it looked like a river, but when you got close, it was definitely a large body of water. Very well still could have been a river. Maybe the size of the Mississippi, but the water was very pristine blue, and there were some tall buildings along the banks on one side. It was actually the opposite side of where I saw the ship. When you zoom in on these pictures, interesting anomalies appear. And those pictures are borne out what I've seen on this Mars anomaly site as well. So, you know, the picture speaks a thousand words. That is definitely true in this case.
Has anybody interviewed this woman who released these photographs?
I don't think it would be safe for her to come out and identify herself. To my knowledge, I don't know. Now, I've thought of contacting either the webmaster or the gentleman who's put all this information on that site to find out if he's willing to talk about it. It might be interesting to get him on the show, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, considering the volatility of the information that she carries, I think the best protection for a person like that would be exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You get, 50 million listeners listen to what she has to say. If they bump her off, they're crazy.
Well, we know they are. Anyway, yeah. Right? Do they have to bump her off for us to find that out?
No, but I mean, it just kind of puts the hallmark on it.
Yes, I understand. Well, I just think it's interesting that there is such obvious proof, and yet they want to pretend, they want to bank on the fact, you know, it's almost like a losing crapshoot that the rest of us aren't going to find out about this. Now, if you're watching American Idol and CNN, you probably won't hear anything about it, but it's a sin that, you know, we have this, our local community college carries the NASA channel, and they show these close-ups of the space shuttle or the International Space Station or some satellite that they put out there, and all you see is a white tarp, or you know, you see a pylon, and you see somebody dangling from a rope or a tether, and that's the representation of what's going on in space. And we see, if you look at these pictures, if you watch everything with a keen eye, you can see saucers darting across the Earth. And occasionally, there's plenty of video on the Internet, too, where you can see them shooting at these craft and referring to them as ice crystals or debris, space debris,
yeah.
when they're doing the kind of flying you were describing. You know, thousands and thousands of miles an hour faster than the shuttle is going. And, you know,
they could just be highly maneuverable ice crystals, you know.
Oh, yeah, or intelligent ice crystals. Maybe below below 200 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I have seen footage of a remarkable exchange. I can't remember for the life of me who showed it to me at this time, but it was several years ago. And essentially, it was supposedly taken from one of the shuttlecraft, and it basically showed, let's just call them bogies or UFOs, since that's the word they like to use, that were flitting about and darting about, and then there were emanations from the surface of the planet coming up to try and intercept these vehicles. And these were not missiles, by the way. These were the type of discharges that had all the earmarks of a beam weapon or a laser of some sort. And it was really quite fascinating because even in the film, you could see that whoever was piloting these things was aware of the oncoming danger and was always out of the way by the time the burst reached them. There were absolutely no calamities. But it was just amazing because these bursts of light or beams or whatever they were are coming from a fairly large area on the surface of the Earth. You know, to see that type of radial dispersion from that high up, they're obviously not all coming from the same place.
Or in space, I would say. In other words, they're not. Maybe the altitude isn't quite as high. Or, you know, the way I recall it, they're shooting across the screen, if you know what I mean. So, and shooting upward, so maybe they were flying at a lower altitude than these craft were.
Well, that's possible, too, because it was against the dark background of the planet. And it was hard to see where they were coming from. But either way, you must have seen the same thing I saw then.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I've seen him. And there are several videos like that out on the web.
It's pretty remarkable footage just the same.
Yes.
Because you talk about not knowing all the laws of physics. All you got to do is watch that. First of all, you have to be a low-grade moron not to realize that this is an intelligently controlled vehicle. And secondly, just watching the maneuvers tells you they're doing something that we are not doing, period. Don't know.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's quite all right. What is it?
I was just curious. What is the IQ point ratio or difference between a moron and a low-grade moron?
Oh, well, that's easy to answer, Don. A low-grade moron's IQ is defined by negative numbers. They are actually owing into the intelligence bank. And I am told that this is an absolute criteria of judgment if you want any job in Washington.
Oh, my goodness. That's why you decided not to work there. I wonder if that's, is that a learned skill or is it just comes with the territory?
I think it's a result of special inbreeding, but that's only my opinion.
Yes. Have you seen the one which is called STS-80? That would have been the flight number 80 of one of the space shuttle. I suppose one could find out which one that actually was by name. You know, they have different names, Atlantis and Columbia, and of course we lost the Challenger. But in that particular video, and it looked like it was either shot from the space station or from a space shuttle, there were maybe around 100 craft that were just flitting all about, and then a large group of somewhere around 10 to 12 of them formed a perfect circle. Now, they were referring to them as, this was one of the Ice Crystals movies, and they referred to, oh, look at all those shiny ice crystals. And one of them, which looked like a mothership, cloaked itself and flew sort of inside the circle that they had arranged in space and lit up like a Christmas tree right in smack dab in the middle, like it was performing mimicking a bullseye, we'll say.
Yeah.
It appeared right in the center of the circle, and you hear the ridiculous conversation going on between mission control and whoever was in this craft. And they're talking about it, and I mean, there's a point where no one watching this could think it was anything other than intelligent beings flying these craft. It's impossible for anything else. They had been going in every direction you can imagine, and they formed a perfect circle with this one craft moving into the center of the circle and retaining that. It's quite fascinating to see it. There are many, many others like that I've seen. And one I saw over Miami was craft flying in a thunderstorm. It was being filmed from the space shuttle flying over Florida. Basically, you could see half of the United States, and when they zoomed in on Florida, Florida was lit up like a Christmas tree, basically from the St. Petersburg area all the way down to Miami. It was just a solid light bar. And these craft were swirling around this thunderstorm. Actually, they were creating the thunderstorm, was the feeling I got.
Well, absolutely. I agree with you, by the way. I really do. Because let me tell you an interesting anecdote that ties right into what you're saying.
Okay.
You know that I have a great deal of respect for the research of Wilhelm Reich.
Yes.
Well, of course, he did so many things to tick off the powers that be that it's not a surprise that he was done away with. But one of the things he got into in the latter part of his life was the notion that these craft were capable of making use of a force that we have not yet understood. And it's that same force, according to Reich, which not only controls gravity, but also controls the weather. So in an effort to understand that in greater detail, Reich built himself a device which he called a cloudbuster. And this cloudbuster looked like an assembly of large pipes on the back of a truck with the capability of being elevated and aimed, you know, something like a cannon would be.
Yes.
And with that, he was able to make clouds disappear and appear and affect thunderstorms and all this kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, it's unofficially recorded that he was the one who used his equipment to break the drought in Maine back in, I forget, it was the 50s or the 60s. But anyway, The tie-in comes from another experiment that he did in Arizona, where he drove this contraption all the way out there and waited in the desert for weeks to catch a glimpse of a UFO flying overhead. And then he actually fired this thing at this unsuspecting craft. And apparently it lost control, came down, and he immediately turned the, you know, turned the device away, and the craft recovered. Now, he wasn't trying to hurt anybody. He was just trying to affirm to his own satisfaction that the same force that he was identifying in his research was, in fact, the agency that propelled these vehicles. And in my opinion, I think he succeeded admirably.
Yeah, those are orgone accumulators is the device that you're initially describing. I've built one according to his patent.
Right.
And they work. They will dispel chemtrails.
Yeah, absolutely. And any other kind of thing that's up there.
Yeah, they gather, what they do is they gather deadly orgone, or what is called DOR.
Right.
And they're not healthy to touch once they're functioning. In other words, you have to be grounded to move this. If you grab the pipes, you will get a jolt of this energy, and it'll cause paralysis.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes that's temporary. Sometimes, you know, it's permanent. I think I've heard of one individual that suffered severe pain in his legs for a long time and did suffer some paralysis. Now, I didn't know how long it lasted, but it was pretty serious. One of the more serious cases I heard about. And they do work. You use crystals with them and metal inside. You make sort of a substrate using like an epoxy resin. Seems to work real well. And they just do their magic. Crystals have the intelligence to draw that energy, and you use copper pipes loaded with these crystals, and also the substrate material inside. You can place some crystals in there, and it just draws it right out of the air over a very wide area. Now, in this video I was describing. In fact, it was taken off the internet, off of satellite at a time when they didn't used to filter these things. And Jeff Challender, who himself was a paraplegic, I think he just passed away late last year. He had spent all his time, 24 hours a day, doing nothing but filming these events that they were showing on satellite TV. And this storm began as a sort of a whirlwind swirling around. If you saw it on a satellite map, you would have thought it was a small hurricane. But it, instead of spreading out like a hurricane does over a wide area, it took on the characteristic of a vortex of energy, sort of cylindrical in shape, maybe moving up several hundred miles. And then the top of it opened up like a mushroom cloud, and it was flashing. You would see these flashes of electricity, lightning bolts, and then a craft came around from behind it and just went around it in a circle. And this was maybe 100 or so miles off of the shore, the eastern shore of Florida. And then when it came around again, there were three more craft. And then by the time this thing was building up, there were at least 18 craft that you could count on the screen at the same time. Phenomenal video. It was one of the most incredible flying saucer videos I've ever seen. And I've been trying to get a DVD copy of that so I could post it on my site. But it's like pulling teeth to get somebody to have it converted. But it will just blow your mind. It is the most incredible thing of any footage you've ever seen of any kind of craft.
Well, I would love to see it myself. I definitely haven't seen that.
So now we have this going on around Earth, and we did intend to talk more about Mars, but we have run out of time. We can pick this up again next week, and I'm going to just keep the heat on and see if I can get a copy of that, because your mind will be, you'll blow a fuse, let's put it that way, when you see this. And it's about 15 minutes long, the portion that I've seen. Just incredible. And you definitely
I'd love to see it.
You definitely get the feeling that what appears to be a craft that's observing a storm is actually creating it as it's going on. You say to yourself, no, they're causing this to happen. And it was like they were putting on this show for those who were in the space shuttle. There's a sense of humor in it too. It's like they're toying, you know, with NASA.
Well, that's exactly the words that came to my mind, you know, that they're being toyed with.
Yeah.
But they should also realize that, you know, it's not only a show they can put on, but if people have the power of doing these things, you know, to snuff out a satellite or a space station or anything else would be mere child's play.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they obviously have incredible capabilities that they're not using in an aggressive manner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim. Well, we're out of time. Again, it's been fascinating. We're covering some interesting territory here. And you're going to be with us, I guess, next week as well, right?
God
next
willing,
Friday.
I'll be here.
Okay. Well, we'll both be here. So, I'll say goodnight to you, and also goodnight to our audience. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Special thanks go out to Don Newsom and our engineer, Seth Hendrick, for a wonderful job tonight. Audio was great. And again, Jim, thank you, and we'll see you next week. Folks, I will be hosting as a guest Mission Possible with Dr. Len Horowitz, and we have a special show this Easter Sunday at 9 p.m. Central, I should say Pacific time, 9 p.m., and that's midnight on the East Coast. We are going to be interviewing Mr. John Clark and discussing the case of Rick Stanley. It's a very important show. You're going to want to tune into that because it deals with our Bill of Rights and our civil rights, and we're going to address these issues throughout the week. There's a very important case coming before the Supreme Court. So tune into that show. Also, tune in next week at the same time. We have some great guests lined up. I'm also doing the TNT NewsHour at 1 p.m. every Wednesday. You want to tune in for that. Also, John Clark will again be my special guest. In the meantime, have a good night, and we'll see you all on Sunday. Good night. This real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Gosh darn, boss. We got this here radio, but we ain't got no batteries.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go into town and get some for the both of us.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Dag nabbit, you and your BBS radio.